Well, I hate turkey. Absolutely hate turkey, Matt.
No good. Julian of this parish had a big old lasagna for Christmas dinner. Obviously, he is Italian, so what a situation that is.
Bloody hell. I had turbot because all my family only eat fish, so different meals for different needs.
What bloody odd
Jesus.
podcast this is. It's that part of the year where time becomes a bit of a blur and you're not sure when or what the day is. Never fear though, as UTAS is here to guide you through the busy week ahead as we look to pick up points playing without a striker. We are, of course, going to look back on the Exeter and Oxford games as well. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Under the Abbey Stand. I'm Jordan Warland. I hope you had a very lovely Christmas and you're looking forward to the new year. And more importantly, the big one before the new year, Jack Swindlehurst's birthday. Get it in the calendar.
Yeah, I'm not getting any younger, am I? I'm
That was
feeling
your
a little
cue.
bit.
That was your cue to jump
I
in,
know.
Jack.
I
Yeah,
was just. Well, I didn't really want to talk about it, mate, because it's not the. It's not the 21st. It's not the 25th.
it's a tough time of year for you, Swindle, because you can't eat chocolate, you can't eat nuts, and your birthday's on like the worst day of the year. Was it the day before New Year's Eve, right?
That's the one.
Well, good to see you, mate. Completing the panel today, my favourite pig in blanket is Matt Caspel.
Jesus. Oh man, I'm on the wrong end of every intro now. I
Oh,
don't know how
no,
this.
hang on, hang on. Let me redo it, Jack. My favorite wiener in blankets, it's Matt Caspel.
I'm on the wrong end of every intro now. This is great. I don't know how it's happened, but it's completely justified. Hello, mate.
Did Santa get you anything via the Cambridge United club shop, Matt? Any CUFC goodies in there? Oh, he's shaking his
Not a
head.
one, but I've got more to open. It's not over yet. It's not over yet, so fingers crossed.
Swindle, it must be a difficult time of year for your family, knowing which club merchandise to buy for, because you've obviously a fan of many, many clubs.
All these Christmas
Ho,
cracker
ho,
jokes coming
ho.
out now,
George had a busy morning. Yeah, Swindle getting like a half and half and half scarf of well, yeah.
What's that, a quarter scarf?
I don't know, yeah.
it's fine. We can get all these little swipes and digs in, because as we were saying off air, no one's going to listen to this pod. Everyone's too busy this time of year to be listening to our twice nominated FSA podcast. But in case they do, we should probably talk about the last couple of games and preview two difficult fixtures coming up to complete the year. The theme of this podcast, gents, is All I Want for Christmas is a Striker. And as we get into the content, you'll see why that is the theme of the pod. We're gonna cover both games. We're gonna start with Exeter, actually, Swindle. And we're gonna start with the striker chat. And a certain UTAS friend, Mr. Kachunga, he was playing in a role that Neil Harris describes as a 9.5. And I thought, you know what, Swindle, you're a tactical genius. Walk us through your opinions on this description and how you thought Kachunga played in that role against both Exeter and Blackpool, because he's been really successful, really fruitful in that sort of close to the striker position.
Yeah, I think he's kind of like showing everybody why he's that player who's a bit cut above. That's his versatility, and that's what he can bring to a league at this level where he's got fairly recent Premier League experience. He's got a wealth of career experience, and he can kind of like bridge the gap between the supporting striker and the striker, or the cam and the striker that we've seen not really kind of managed by Cambridge particularly well. He's just got such good game awareness and just a bit more time on the ball, really. He's also clinical in those last bit little positions. The goals we've seen him scored haven't been particularly spectacular, or it's just in the right place, right time, clinical, doing what he needs to do. But yeah, it's a bit more dynamic than your kind of out and out striker. It's dropping a bit deeper, picking up the ball, also involving the wide players as well. I think we've lost you know, ever since Wes Houlihan, really, we've lost that kind of linchpin of somebody who can join all of the dots. And I'm not saying that Kachunga is that position or maybe that level, but he's certainly kind of showing flashes of Premier League experience and just a bit more game experience. And it's great to see. And it's a shame, really, we're back at this position at this time of year, once again, talking about lack of personnel and injury. And, you know, Kachunga himself has had layoffs already and is going to be, you know, out again by the looks of it. And it's frustrating to see, because we want players like him to get a run in the team to kind of help us gain a bit of momentum, but also stamp our authority on games. And I think, you know, we look at the Exeter game and we're going to dissect that. And I think we played well enough in that game, and Kachunga was involved, of course. And I think they were pretty poor in all respects, Exeter. But yeah.
No, you make a very brilliant point, as always, Mr. Swindlehurst. And I think we've spoken a lot on this pod so far this season about how playing just one up top, we've been really isolated. We struggled when we played against three at the back there. So introducing that 0.5 role has really sort of, yeah, it feels like it's helped, hasn't it? Getting someone closer to the striker that goal against Exeter, that was proper sort of poacher goal, wasn't it? Right place, right time, like you say. Just following on from that then, Swindle, you know, was really influential against Exeter. As you pointed out, he didn't play against Oxford. It was a shame. We saw the squad come in and he wasn't there. We found out post-game that he's got a hamstring injury and he's going to be out for 2 weeks. What do you think the impact is going to be on the squad, given that he is sort of the main supporting role behind a striker? If we had a striker ahead of him, of course, that is.
Yeah, I feel like we're so kind of tight on personnel at the moment. It's kind of not quite a crisis, but it's going to give us a real headache. I think setting up against Oxford, it looked odd, to say the least. And I think, you know, Kachunga could be that versatile player that you could probably fill a few positions with in games like this when you're short on a striker or, you know, the people behind them. But we're really going to have to put together a bit of a threadbare squad and then use the upcoming transfer window really well, because, you know, with people like Ahad May, who looks like he's out for a really long time, and even, you know, the couple of weeks that Kachunga's out, it's going to put a lot of strain on the players that are playing. And also that we are just lacking that cutting edge of goal scorer and the people who can support them. So yeah, we really need to get more bodies through the door.
Also, is a hamstring injury ever 2 weeks? Has it ever been 2 weeks? That's just true. It's just not true, is it?
I was also going to say, like, this time of the year and maybe Easter to a similar extent, 2 weeks is actually massive, because it's not, you know, two games. There's a ton of games. So yeah, missed Oxford, or we'll miss Stevenage and Orient and possibly, you know.
I just think, honestly, maybe the 2 weeks thing is we don't want to go into the transfer window and have everyone else know that we are on our knees, like, desperate, because there's this sort of like weird belief that Kachunga's about to come back. But I honestly, maybe I'm cynical now, I'll just be really surprised if he just pops back in the squad for like Blackburn.
Are you doubting Ben Strang's poker face in the old recruitment phone calls? Yeah, no, we've got loads of strikers, you know.
Yeah, we've got them for days. This lad, Brandon and Joku, he's banging them in the Conference South or whatever it is. Yeah.
Matt, sticking with the Exeter game, you and I were there, saw each other. Lovely, lovely old evening. I'm hoping you got your car moved at 4 a.m. But talking about the match action specifically, as you're a man on his way to getting his coaching badges, I wanted to get your thoughts on Mr. Harris's tactics. First half, I thought we were dominant for the majority of the first half, but then let Exeter back in. And then the second half, which I found interesting and I wanted your take on, was around the 70th minute mark, he took Ahad May off and started playing on the counter. Now, we know since then that Ahad May had obviously got a knock. I think it's a fractured foot that's keeping him out. But at the time, we didn't know that. And it seemed a bit odd, you know, taking your main outlet off and playing on the counter against a team that were a bit rubbish, as Swindle pointed out earlier. From your perspective, was this a tactical masterclass or was this negative football, you know?
That's a lot to unpack there. Firstly, no, I didn't move my car after the pub, considering the pub and the Abbey. The Abbey was featured in one of sort of 12 pubs of Christmas on that visit. It felt
Good man.
It felt like it probably wasn't the right thing to do, to be honest. So no, the car stayed, and don't even get me started on what happened afterwards with that. But was it a tactical masterclass? I think you're right. I think we started really well. I mean, all the narrative before the game was just like, get your early goal and assume that with your early goal, you'll be in a position to kind of control the game and just push them over and tip them over. Guess that didn't quite happen for us, as you say. So in the second half, having taken that lead, it felt like things could have been more comfortable for us. And again, we probably would have benefited from getting a second goal earlier on. Same story at Oxford, but a different outcome, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, so the game became, I guess, unnecessarily uncomfortable. But when you consider, really, we're probably just putting points over performances right now. I don't think I have a problem with it. I think it's inevitable, even against a team in Exeter's form, that they're going to have their moments. Obviously, we wouldn't know at the time, but they did go on to beat Wickham yesterday. They had just got a point with 10 men against Stevenage. So I think there's a possibility that they may maybe be turning a corner around. And if actually their form is starting to swing back, it's just a good result, isn't it? Like, yes, it was a bit uncomfortable for sure for 20 minutes, but we fundamentally got the job done. We went and obviously got the second goal. I think with Ahadmi, obviously, it obviously transpires he was injured. Don't know whether they knew that before the game anyway and just thought, we'll just see what happens and see if we can get a bit more out of him. Not sure, really, but it's a real shame to see him get injured, to be honest, because obviously goal scoring form has really come together for him. A lot of them have been penalties, but the quality and the level of convincingness of the penalties has been increasing. So obviously the penalty scored against Exeter was actually really well taken, great finish. So just for him on a personal level, I guess it's a shame. Hopefully he gets back to fitness and can help us down the stretch.
Do you think he'll stay with us? Because obviously it's like 10 to 12 weeks. So what's that?
March
time? Do you think he'll stay with us, or do you think Ipswich would call him back for, treatment? I guess a fractured foot isn't the most difficult injury that needs sort of recovering from. I don't know. Swindle, you get injured a lot. Fractured foot, you'd be back on the 3G in a couple of weeks, wouldn't you?
I reckon it's more than a knock. You were quite you called it a knock earlier. I reckon it's more than a knock. I think it'll take a bit of rehab, and yeah, I think.
She's not tough as nails like me, mate. I could walk a fracture off.
Oh, of course, mate. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see them recall him. It's a shame, really, because he was just getting into the stride of things and looking to make a difference and hit a bit of momentum. But Cambridge United do seem to be a little bit cursed in that respect. You know, when players start to get on a good run, they get injured. But if he does go, we'll have to wish him the best. But if Cambridge United do keep him for the rest of the season, you imagine they'll be working with him on the rehab and hoping to get him back on what could be a crucial time in April. But we need to find someone between now and then to fill that huge gap.
Matt, you were talking about points a second ago. I'm going to read out a statement and I want your thoughts on it. 27 points on the board at Christmas, i.e. after 22 games, not including the Oxford one there. It took Cambridge United until game 31 to reach that milestone last season. How's that statement sit with you?
That feels good, right? I mean,
real good. Real good.
Just feels good, to be honest. Like, even yesterday being Oxford after the game, just able to look at the league table and just think, this is fine, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Like, there's enough distance at the moment and we're comfortable and we're going. Obviously, we've got a problem with this, these injuries for sure, but we've also got an opportunity coming up in a few days' time, and I'm sure they're working very hard on it right now. And you feel like Neil Harris will have, he'll have the contact. Like, if there's one thing he'll be able to scare up, it will be a striker. It just feels like. So there's enough to not be worried about. The points tally is good. I mean, I guess we're over halfway where we want to be, which is good. See, halfway through the season now, so we're ahead of the rate. It'd be really nice if, even if now we are going to be, it feels to me like we're going to concede probably more goals than we were for sure, but we're also going to score more goals, and our XG is completely different now. It's completely transformed versus where it was before. So I feel like our form is probably going to get less consistent. I think we're going to be up and down, win, lose, draw, win, do you know what I mean? Just like all over the place. But I think that the net outcome of that is probably more points and a bit more comfort, hopefully, heading into March, April, May.
I think that point on the form is really interesting. I'd agree. And I'd also say that I think the form will be perhaps a lot like it was against Oxford. So, you know, ultimately that will go down as an L and as a loss. But actually the game feels like it's one that we could have got a win or a draw from. And I think maybe, you know, that the style of play, we might see a few more of those, like the defeats being not as obvious as perhaps they would have been under the previous regime.
Yeah, I just think as well with the points tally now, you know, psychologically, comparatively last season when we reached this points tally, or, you know, 31 games it took us to get here, we were just on such a low ebb, like emotionally, psychologically for the players, it can't be good to be on that run of form. And it just feels like at the moment, we hopefully don't have that barren a run in our locker this season at all, that whilst we might lose a few games, and Stevenage is certainly a really tough game to have coming next, it just feels like we will, you know, we'll just find a win out of somewhere within the next couple of weeks. That means we won't go on one of those horrific runs of form, which means hopefully we'll be able to maintain a decent gap down to the bottom four and never have to have too much stress this season, hopefully. Maybe playoffs, George. Make sure you keep May the 18th free.
We did get asked the question. I think it was Steve that tweeted in saying, you know, does losing to Oxford derail the promotion push, the playoff push?
So, George, if we'd won yesterday, how would you be getting nervous? Or
is this in regards to where my stag is?
Is it your stag or your actual wedding?
Stag. Okay. I'm not the kind of guy that would book a wedding during the football season. That is ridiculous.
So I got married on May the 17th. So yeah.
No, the good news is my stag has also been moved. So it's, you know, we can all sleep easily knowing that our plain sailing to the playoff final will not be causing me any nightmares about sort of potentially missing it. So it's all good. It's all good. I've done my part, Neil Harris, by rearranging. You just now need to do your part. So yeah, get it done, mate. Get it done. Swindle, there's been a couple of players in this sort of, you know, past sort of 5 days who've had a really good week, even though we lost yesterday against Oxford. I think the name that probably stands out for having the best of those two games is Danny Andrew at left back. One man of the match against Exeter, played pretty well against Oxford, especially in the first half when we were sort of all over them. Do you feel like we're starting to see the best of him? And I think we had a question, I can't remember who sent this one in, basically saying, you know, is it time for UTAS to show him some love? Which I feel a little bit hard done by. I feel like I've stuck up for him on previous pods. But yeah, do you think we're starting to see the best of him? And do you think having Brophy play ahead of him is maybe a factor in that?
Yeah, definitely. I think we did give him a bit of support at the start of the season, and then other than yourself, I think maybe that he has received a bit of a battering. I think some of his performances have been really below par, and his, you know, end product also. But yeah, like you say, real kind of marked improvement. And Brophy is just growing into a player who can be really important for United after being another one who got an absolute battering from people. But yeah, he's starting to own the position a little bit more, and he's getting a bit more confidence. He needs to really get that confidence in front of goal, and I don't want to dwell on that one too much. But yeah, I think he can pull players forward and, you know, give them a bit more of an option, a bit more of an outlet. And I think Andrew's confidence within the team is growing as well. I think he feels like he belongs. I think there was a little bit of maybe imposter syndrome at the start of the season. He was looking very unsure in the games that he wasn't playing well in, and he was, you know, much more of a confidence player. He seems to be a bit more of a consistent player now, which is kind of what you want to see in a season this long. And probably having someone like Neil Harris come in and just give you a bit of, you know, one-to-one management and talk to you about your own game is probably as important as having Brophy ahead of him. And I think you've seen a few players just kind of step up and maybe bring a bit more to their game than we might have seen before. And I think Neil Harris coming in could be the reason for that, because he's kind of a bit more of an established, experienced manager, and it's good to see. And games against Oxford, you know, we have to take those, and it's frustrating because we've had a few disappointments at the end of games. But if we're talking about players, I think Andrew is certainly improving and could be really important for us. I think Caspel's point about got to be happy about where we are now, points wise, and looking back to last season, it's true. I think we're where we should be, just about. Well, probably a little bit ahead of where we should be, but I think we need to remember if we, lose a tough game to Stevenage and then first game of the year against Leyton Orient, it'll suddenly all seem a bit barren again. So it's, it's an important part of the season. But yeah, Danny Andrew himself has certainly lifted my opinion and a lot of the other fans' opinion, I think.
Matt, let's return to the topic of this pod, which is All I Want for Christmas is a Striker. Let's move on to the Oxford defeat in more detail. Obviously, we know now why Kachunga wasn't in the squad. We know why Hadmi wasn't in the squad. Fajiri was obviously, we knew, was out for, I think, a similar sort of time, 10 weeks. But you were there at the ground. What was your response or your thoughts, 2 o'clock when that team sheet came out and you sort of flick through it and you're like, wow, there's no number nine here. There's no number 9.5 here. What the hell is this?
It was an interesting 10 minute or so period whilst I guess you're looking at it, everyone's trying to work out.
You've gone from the confusion of someone having lasagna for Christmas dinner to the confusion of that lineup. And you're like, this is too much. It's too much for a Boxing Day.
Yeah, from pasta sheets to team sheets, basically. and very big transition to make.
That's the title of the pod right there, so we can write that one down, mate.
It's just confusion. I mean, obviously, when you see the names, you obviously start the 11, but then you quickly work out that there's also no one in the squad. You're like, right, okay, obviously things have gone on here. It's obviously injury-related, so you're not abundantly confused at why they're not there, but then it very quickly just turns to everyone having their own attempt at trying to work out what the shape is going to be. And of the list of people who were sort of tipped to be like leading the line, I guess, obviously Sully Kaikai was one.
Kaikai was who I thought. That was my guess. I saw some people saying Lancaster, which I thought,
yeah, there was suggestions about Lancaster, even mentions of like Brophy. Honestly, it was genuinely like, it was a real like, and some people saying like George Thomas as well. So it's just like any one of these people could theoretically lead the line here.
Is now a good time to say that you were texting us saying you wanted Ryan Bennett up there?
I think it's as good as...
Or was that tongue in cheek?
I think it's as good as any. I think it was more if you're in that situation and this is the set of options you have available to you. I don't think it was tongue-in-cheek. I think you could do a lot worse. You could certainly do a lot better. But when you're looking at the squad we had available, I don't know. I mean, I guess then it kind of switches on to, how are we actually going to set up? Like, what's the plan going to be here, right?
Well, the follow-on question there then is, it kind of worked, right? First half was brilliant from United, especially the sort of second part of the first half,
it didn't even kind of work. I mean, it just absolutely completely worked. Obviously his hands were tied in terms of personnel, but we were brilliant. I mean, it was actually just genuinely absolutely fantastic to see us properly having a go at Oxford. We were really just really willing to press high, really willing to run with the ball, little overlaps, like flick-ons. You got like little Cruyff turns going on. Like, it was just absolutely, to be honest, it was interesting because the atmosphere in the away end was pretty flat, to be honest, not because of the lineup, but just because I think Boxing Day is always a bit slow starting. It was still better than the home atmosphere, which was absolutely shite, I will say, for a sold out 10,000 people. Really poor. But actually, so well were we playing that actually the atmosphere in the away end really started to steep up towards the end of the first half, because it felt like we were just winning corner after corner, closing them down really sharp, winning the ball back loads, creating really good chances. I mean, the only issue in that first half is that we haven't finished the half 2 or 3 goals ahead. It became very clear that's obviously what we needed. I mean, even at half time, I don't think anyone at halftime was hitting the roof and like, oh my God, we're smashing and we're going to win the game comfortable. I think everyone was looking at each other and going, it's going to be a whole second half of football here, and it could be dramatically different to the first half in its nature, if that makes sense. And a sort of, there was a sense, I'll be honest, a sense of foreboding in the away end, I think, of just the quality that Oxford possessed, to be honest. And we saw that, right? The number, the players they were, if you compare the two benches and the players they're bringing on, it was like night and day yesterday. So it wasn't a major surprise when the game swung around at us. But I really actually felt like Oxford didn't put it on us that much. And maybe some individual mistakes. I think, to be honest, we just grew a bit tired in that second half.
Well, that was, I was going to ask, like, why did you think there was such a big drop off in the second half? Do you think it was just purely because Oxford had the quality on the bench that they could change it up, or do you think playing without a number nine and sort of playing that style just meant that actually body's tired, and you know, you look at the winning goal and it's clearly a tired sort of you know, a tired defence that doesn't quite pick up the man. It's a tired Brophy that, you know, gives away a foul. Why do you think the big drop off? Because the first half, I think, was like the best we've played all season, maybe for a long time.
I think the last
20 minutes was that exciting.
I just think the first half for us was, it's possible in that 45 minutes of first half, we expended about 80 minutes of energy is how I describe it. Because in the last 20, 30 minutes of the game, it felt like people were just out on their feet. I mean, Oxford possess so much quality. It's a combination of the two, basically. I think having a thin squad meant that obviously we didn't have a huge amount of options available to us to make changes, or certainly not the changes we want to be able to make. And to be honest, the first half, as good as we were, and this is kind of the, I guess it's going to sound a bit negative, is the crushing reality of League One for us, I think, is that that's probably the best we played in a few years. And Oxford's Oxford have got the 3 points. That's probably the worst they might play all season, to be honest. And I think that just shows the levels that we're at. So when you bring in people like Josh McEachran off the bench for the last 20 minutes against a team that's, you know, growing pretty weary, it wasn't only Brophy, like Liam Bennett as well, like just that, like he was fading away in terms of, they just put so much work and effort in. That we just couldn't sustain it for the whole 90 minutes, which is a real shame, because actually just felt like we deserved probably at least a point and maybe even more. I was proud. I was really happy. Honestly, like the performance I thought was really strong. I think the game was about 20 minutes too long for us and it just sort of started to wear us down. But I sort of after the game feeling pretty philosophical and just saying, I know we have no strikers, but if we approach more games that way with that kind of intent and energy, I think we'll blow away a few teams in this division. I think we'll beat anyone in the bottom eight in our sort of mini league, home or away. And that's what we actually have to do to stay in this division. Like, you're going to go to places like Oxford and Derby or whatever and Portsmouth, and they'll just tip you over most likely. But if we go and play against that, like anyone in the bottom half of the table, probably you're going to give yourself a really good chance of taking a 2-3 goal lead and just banking it home and sort of coasting it on in.
It's a really good point, isn't it? Because I think earlier in the season and at other points that we've been in League One, we've spoken about, oh, we don't know how to play against teams that are going to, you know, give us the ball or going to sit back, and we're going to have to sort of play through them and break them down. And actually, we showed against a pretty decent Oxford side that we can do it. There is the quality in the squad now to do it. So kind of, yeah, like you say, one, it was, you know, really great to see it. And I love that you used the word proud there. But yeah, it also kind of gives you the confidence going into the rest of the season, saying, look, we have got a style of play here that we could put other teams to the sword. I guess the only negative to sort of playing that way is the, you know, the amount of energy that it saps from people. You know, we dropped off in the second half. Swindle, as Matt was saying there, that's probably the reason that we lost. Are you concerned going into the next two games that, you know, with the injuries that we've got, that we're just not going to be able to sort of sustain that way of playing football, and we're going to need to find another way to sort of get through the Stevenage and Orient games?
No, I think it's a kind of little bit of like swashbuckling football that you kind of have to go out and play. And I think, incidentally, we would have won that game if we were 2-0 up yesterday, which we should have been. And I think, you know, it's fine margins. And I think we were very close to taking a point away from yesterday.
It's a dangerous scoreline, though, isn't it, 2-0? So.
It is a dangerous scoreline, but it's less dangerous than 1-0 in some respects, certainly sometimes. So, yeah, we should have been 2-0 up, bro. We should have scored that header. And, yeah, we could have had a bit more to play with. But I think that's kind of like the mentality we're going to employ now. And that's the way we're going to play, especially with the lack of personnel we've now got. I think we're going to be going for games like that. We're going to be seeing a period of the game to attack a team and really go for the jugular. We've been quite tentative, not just under Bonner. Well, just under Bonner, because Bonner's been the manager for so long. We've been quite tentative for quite a long time. So I think it's quite good to see Cambridge United going for it a bit. And without being, you know, just kind of careless, you know, going for games and giving themselves a chance against teams like that. I think Stevenage will be a really hard one, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see, certainly in a period of the game, United really go for it and try and put them under pressure and not just nick a goal and sit on it. So as Kasper referenced earlier, I wonder if this kind of under the new regime and with the set of players we've got and hopefully the ones we acquire, it could be one of those seasons where kind of consistency goes out the window, but, you know, we'll see a couple of wins and then a couple of losses and a draw and a loss and a couple of wins or whatever. But yeah, I think it could be quite hard to predict and certainly make our jobs a little bit harder, but it could be quite a fun season from the point of view, you know, of a fan. You want to clip that though, what I just said there, because we'll probably get pumped 5 games in a row and then be staring at relegation again.
Well, you're doing a clipping, so I'll let you decide. Swindle, you mentioned Brophy there. I always feel bad sort of asking direct questions that dig people out, especially if they're pals of mine that we do daddy activities together with. Well, that sounds dodgy. Clip that out.
Oh, that's so good.
part of the UTAS dad club, my pal James Brophy. But we have had a couple of questions in about him. And I'll go with Boris's question. And he says, why is it that Brophy finishes like Ronaldo in warm-ups and Ronald Weasley in games?
Hold on. The finishing isn't good, right? Let's be clear, and he'll know that as well. I just want to jump in.
The second part to Boris's question is it rotten luck or is he just woeful when it matters?
No, it's not bad luck, right? Obviously, but he was in too many good positions. I mean, yesterday, the Oxford game, obviously the header, which I thought was harder than it looked. Because I think the ball was probably a bit behind him. I think if the ball's in the right spot, he just heads it in because it's almost like physics at that point. Like, you just have to. The other chance in the first half, I think, is actually more presentable. The one where Thomas, like, flipped it back to him and the keeper had been kind of taken away.
Is that where he just pulls it back instead of shooting?
I think that was a shot, Jordan, if I'm honest. Right. that was my sense at the end, is that I think he was sort of caught midships and maybe shooting, maybe not. I mean, just roll that one in is the kind of, you know, is what my badges are telling me, obviously. What I will say in Brophy's favour for sure is that there are several other members of our playing team who are never getting in these positions at all, and yeah, he is now getting them once or twice a game. There's certainly something has changed with him under Neil Harris. And if he keeps getting in those positions, he is going to score. It's just like, it is fundamentally a matter of time. What I would also say is the entire away end, not just because we wanted another goal anyway, but I think everyone is like ready for him to score.
It's going to go bananas when he scores, for sure.
Yeah, it just will. And that's fair. I mean, no, finishing isn't his strongest suit, but he was also one of our best players in that game. He carried the ball a huge distance in the game generally and was probably one of our biggest like attacking outlets. So
we all know how this goes as well. He'll get one goal and a few more will follow. I think Kasper's made a great point. He's finding these positions which other players aren't and weren't. He's driving the ball forward for us. I mean, he's incredibly, you know, contributing to the team at the moment. It's only a matter of time. I just want to say, make one other point as well from the question that we had. We appreciate all the questions coming in, but dragging Ron Weasley into it when he's a goalkeeper is just a bit out of order, really. So, you know.
Oh, you loser.
Yeah, this is why that question was for Swindle. Right. I think he's going to score. I think it will be against Orient, which leads us nicely into the Stevenage and Orient previews. But yeah, the UTAS dads sticking up for James Brophy there. Right, the games come thick and fast, starting with Friday, an away trip to Stevenage, who are currently in the playoffs. I spoke with a very enthusiastic Stevenage fan, Matt, who was on the pod earlier in the year as well, from the Stevenage FC podcast, to get an update on how their season is going. Right then, news fans, it's time to get our Stevenage preview with a Stevenage fan. Very happy to say joining us again for second appearance on the pod, it's Matt from the Stevenage FC pod. How you doing, Matt?
Yeah, look, fantastic. Well, I mean, especially with my team doing the things we're doing at the minute, my man. So I'm over the moon at the minute.
When we spoke to you last at the start of the season, must have been a couple of games in, we had a lot of people feedback that, oh, that Matt Stevenage fan was very optimistic and loving life, wasn't he? And now we're sort of sat here half a season on and you're sixth in the table, mate. So are you okay? You're going to be able to control the excitement of as we go into this one?
Just about, mate. I think I can barely just hold it on a thread, I think, at the minute. But my God. Look, I'm a positive Stevenage Football Club supporter anyway, for the people that know me. I mean, I'm a guy that 3 years ago was saying that we were going to stay up when it all looked doom and gloom, and we did that in the end. But what a season. I mean, what a journey we've been on. And, you know, when I look back to our kind of last 5 years that we've had, you know, no one dreamt that we'd ever be doing the things we're doing now. So what a season it's been since we played you at the start of the season. I think that was the third League One game of the season. It's been magnificent. We're doing the things that we believed we could do, but I don't think we were certain at the start of the season. We've done all that. We've won half our matches that we've played, 12 from 24. We've been on unbeaten runs. It's just been a remarkable season. But yeah, I think when you look at the league table, I was doing it this morning after that big win yesterday, and sixth place with 43 points is just unimaginable. So proud, so happy. Mate, honestly, I'm on a cloud nine at the minute, I think it is.
I tell you what, Matt, seven more points and I think you'll be safe.
We've all been saying it.
So yeah, sixth in the table. Just looking at the form table for the last 10 games, and you're fourth in that one. What's the story of the success, and how come you find yourselves sixth in the table? What's the magic formula?
A few simple things, really. I've had this question a lot from opposing fans and other podcasts, and I answer it as simple as I have done for all of those questions. Very simply, you know, when we came up to League One, you know, the management team looked at that original side, and it was a great original side that got us promoted. But the management team looked at it and thought, well, we can either come up to League One and stay with that team. And don't get me wrong, there's half the team that we've got now are players that won us promotion. You know, can we stay with that side and, you know, do all right, be competitive, probably not doing the things we're doing now, or do we really want to be competitive and surprise a lot of people and be up the top? So what the management team did very simply is they kind of just upgraded the team. They kept all the players that could come up the level and adapt and get better. But, you know, they upgraded the team. They signed top League One level players, that, you know, the Thompson brothers, Nathan and Louis, Dan Butler. I'm trying to think of Ben Thompson. You know, we signed a whole host of array of players that are used to compete for promotion in this division. So that's all we've done. We've kept exactly the same style. You know, we're direct, we get the ball forward, we play in the final third, we're great from set pieces, we press high, we're a very fit group. We've kept all of those things about our game, but we've just got better players for the level. And that's all that we've done, really. And that's been the recipe to our success. One of the other things that I think we've done brilliantly is we've been able to capture a few fantastic young loanees from your Man Cities, etc. We've got a player in Finley Burns who, you know, was loaned to us by what Steve Evans says, a very good friend in Pep. I don't know if he's been legit with that, but, you know, we've captured players like that. We've been very good in the loan market. And yeah, it's a recipe to our success. The way that we've kind of built a team of no reserves. Steve Evans likes to use a phrase with our club, which is called no stocking fillers. We don't want players sitting around who are reserves who aren't going to play. Every single player we have in our squad is a starting player. It doesn't matter if you're on the bench, you can be asked to play and win as well at this level. And that's one of the other key things that we've done to this team in League One, and it's why we're being so successful. So I would say those are the main standout things that we've done as a team, as a club, and thankfully it's working out at the minute.
Well, squad depth, such an interesting topic given this time of year and the fact that sort of the games come thick and fast. So obviously you played Northampton on, I forget what day it is. It's
yesterday,
But you played them on Boxing Day, and then obviously you've got us on Thursday. Do you reckon there'll be much change to that starting 11 that started against Northampton? Have you got the sort of the players that you can rotate in and keep everyone fresh, or do you think it'll be the same 11?
Yeah, good question. We were speaking about it on our pod this morning. And look, when we lost to Barnsley 2 days before Christmas Day, day before Christmas Eve and Saturday, and it was very evident that we probably needed to make a few changes. And the manager did that for the Boxing Day game yesterday. It was probably our best performance and win of the season. It was a truly magnificent win. We called it marvellous on our podcast, and that was the thumbnail for our pod. But he made changes and he gave players a go that haven't had a massive go this season. Players like Elliot List, who hasn't had a lot of game time this season because he's come back from a bad knee injury that he had last season. Listy played, scored and got an assist and was brilliant. And changed the midfield around as well. So we were saying on our pod this morning, we expect it to be, if not the same, the exact same 11 that plays yesterday. Because I just think with a performance like that yesterday, the way that we played, you know, the players' performance, it would be probably silly to change that 11. So I think Steve will look to keep that exact same 11 that won us the match yesterday, 3-0 on Boxing Day. So, no, I don't think there'll be any changes. You never know with our team. We've said it many a times this season that, you know, we've gone into games going, oh, we play the same 11, we get there, and then there's three or four changes. That's just the way that our team is, with that no stocking filler comment earlier. But I think if I'm a betting man, Steve would look to play that exact same 11 yesterday on the game on Friday.
So if you're a Cambridge fan and you're stood in the away end, what names and numbers should you be looking out for on the Stevenage team as people that are potentially going to be match winners for Stevenage?
Oh, my word, there's a few that stick out. I mean, you're going to have to keep your eye on BGR, big goal Reed. He scored the winner at your place back earlier in the season. He's currently joint top goal scorer in League One, 14 goals. Jamie Reed, what a player, what a season. He scored yesterday again. That guy's on fire. He's being watched by loads of Championship clubs at the minute, we're told. You're going to have to keep an eye on him. And he's got a knack of, and again, he did it at the reverse fixture in the 2-1 at your place. He's got a knack of scoring big goals at big minutes in the game. He's been known for last minute winners. He scored a 100th minute winner a few weeks ago. Big play. You're going to have to keep your eye on him. He's absolutely on fire at the minute this season, and has become a bit of a club legend at our club from the last kind of 2 years of big goals that he scored. So yeah, Jamie Reed, number 19, big goal Reedy. Cole Piergiani as well, skipper, number 5 from corners. That guy does not lose a header in the box. Honestly, it's unreal. Probably been our player of the season, to be honest with you, along with Jamie Reed. But it's not just Cole from being a threat from set pieces. He's his defensive quality as well. He's absolutely magnificent at the back, and he's leading a defence that are currently the third best in League One. So Cole Piergiani, I think if I had to pick out another, it'd be Jordan Roberts, number 11. What a player. He should be playing Championship football, to be honest with you. And, you know, it's his qualities. He's a free role player in the attacking midfield. He's got that freedom to go and do what he wants, and he's done it this season. And Jordan was a player that we got prior to League Two last season, and early on into the season, we all knew that he could definitely come up to League One. And he was a player that should be playing in a higher league. So it's been great to see him excel this season as a League One player, and you know, kind of portray the ability that we all thought that he had coming into League One. Big player, scores goals, gets a lot of assists, very good in the air as well. But I would say those are probably the three standout players that you Cambridge fans are going to need to keep an eye on.
So a lot of positives there about the Stevenage squad. Let's flip it a little bit then and say, if you're on Neil Harris's scouting staff and you're looking at ways that you might be able to get one over Stevenage, any sort of niggling doubts for you there? Any specific areas or types of play that perhaps you struggle a little bit against? I know
that's a really good question.
Must be hard, you know, obviously being sick from the table, you don't lose too many games, but has there been anything that you've noticed recently you think, oh, that's a weakness?
A really good question. And the thing is, you're speaking to the most positive Stevenage fan ever. So to get a negative out of me, my man, is going to be difficult. I think the only thing I can really look to is whenever we've lost, and this doesn't really apply for the Barnsley and Reading losses, because Barnsley, we shouldn't have lost that last week. But when I look to the losses that we've had against Blackpool and Oxford, for example, I think the only thing that was evident in those games is when those sides move the ball through the lines in quick succession to the final third of the pitch. And we seemed on those games to struggle with that type of style. So more so Blackpool. I remember we lost 3-0 away. Bit of a bad day at the office for us. That was our last loss before Barnsley. Mm-hmm. And we just struggled with the pace of the ball through the lines that day in quick succession. So I think if I had to say one thing that has just been apparent when we've lost our matches, it's probably that, really. So if you're able to move the ball quickly through the lines at speed with quality in the final third, there's been moments this season where we've struggled with that. But I think in terms of a weakness, that's probably one of the only things I've seen this season. But yeah, I would go with that.
Brilliant. It feels like playing Stevenage over the festive period feels like being back in the conference again. It seems to always be a thing back then. Go on then. One last question, Matt. I think I'm going to put my neck out there and say you're going to predict a win. But what's your prediction for how the game will play out when we visit you in a couple of days' time? And yeah, what's your score prediction?
Well, could you imagine if I didn't predict to win? It'd be the most shocking thing ever, wouldn't it? Like, hang on a sec, who's this guy? This isn't the same guy that came on back in August. No, look, I think it'll be a win. I just think, that win for us yesterday was massive. And I think we look at kind of the two Christmas games, Northampton, which won yesterday against yourselves, as really important games for us. If we want to stay up there, these are the two games which are really going to dictate the start of the second half of the season. So, yeah, I think after that big win and performance yesterday, that the players will be on a massive high. And, you know, whenever we've lost this season, we've always responded with a good few wins as well. And Steve, he hasn't just done it this season. He did it last year as well. We lose a game, we go and win the next three or four. So I think that'll be the same for this Friday. I think we'll win the game. And I'd like to think if we can play to the same level that we did yesterday, I could see a 2-0 win for us at home. So, yeah, I'm going to go 2-0 win.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Matt. Best of luck for the rest of the season. Hope you keep everyone in January and the momentum carries on for you.
No, thank you very much. Thanks for having me on. Best luck for the rest of the season.
Right. Thank you very much to Matt from the Stevenage FC podcast there. Matt is loving life. He was enjoying League One when we spoke to him after three games. After 20 odd games, he is still loving life. And yeah, I think Friday's trip to Stevenage could be bit of an uncomfortable afternoon. UTAS Matt, who is not quite as excitable as Stevenage Matt, but maybe might lift the levels for the last 10 minutes of the pod if we ask him nicely. How do you think a team playing a false nine is going to get on against a Steve Evans team and his style of play? Because I'm fearing the worst.
I guess Oxford were just really surprised as much as anything by that lineup, as much as we were. And I worry that we've maybe lost now that piece of the advantage of, at least if you have to completely shuffle the pack and completely change your style of play, it's going to be extremely like unpredictable and not something they will have prepared for whatsoever. But my worry is that Steve Evans obviously has some... He has a few flaws, maybe, but I think he's probably pretty good at doing his homework. That is the sense that I get, is that he's very diligent at preparing for these things. This is Harris's biggest test so far, for sure. I think this, from a tactical perspective, now is definitely going to be the hardest game that we've had, I think, with the personnel we have available. With Stevenage always being a difficult place to go, it just has that feeling around it. I don't know, because I don't have my badges yet, whether a false nine gets eaten alive by Steve Evans' team. All I know is that lots of teams are going there and getting eaten alive. So I will be interested to see what happens. Obviously, we know that Paul Digby will be back and available for us, but we also know that maybe there's a need to manage some minutes. And one of the biggest things that's changed over the last few weeks is that Jordan Cousins is back and fit and playing really well and having a huge influence.
Scoring goals,
which is, all of that is really good. So it is an interesting situation, because logically, logically he'll be back with us, and maybe that means Cousins gets rotated out. That's an extremely big call. And then obviously that leaves you with, well, what do we do with George Thomas? Thomas actually ended up playing basically probably in that 9.5 role in the second half at Oxford. So we actually did switch it around during the game as well. I don't know. I don't envy Neil Harris and the situation that he's in, but all I can say, I guess, is that with the result, the early results we had under our belt, we know we can go to Stevenage and we can lose that game, and for it to not be the end of the world. That doesn't mean it's a free hit. Just want to be clear. Tom Walker will be getting really stressed right now.
One thing we learned from enthusiastic Matt was that Stevenage struggle against teams that move the ball quickly. And so I feel like, you know, that last sort of 20, 25 minutes of the first half against Oxford, that's exactly what we were doing. So maybe more of the same, even if they have done their scouting and they're a bit more prepared for it, could still sort of throw things in our favour. I might be being a little bit optimistic there. Swindle, Matt mentioned, or UTAS Matt, or non-enthusiastic Matt, whichever you want to call him.
Non-enthusiastic.
Chopper Matt, whatever you want to call him. He mentioned that Digby will be back after his lovely two-game break, which coincidentally went across Christmas. I see what you've done there, Paul Digby. He'll be back. Obviously, he used to play for Stevenage. There was talk in the summer that they were in for him. Does he come straight back into the first 11 for you?
Yeah, I think so. I think given the kind of how light we are generally, and just, you know, we spoke about Digby and how important he was last season, whether he was producing good performances week in, week out or not. He's, you know, a reliable player. He's physical, usually in the right amount. And I think he will, you know, hit the ground running again. And I think he'll feel like he's got a few wrongs to be righted, you know, after that red card, another red card for him. And I think he'll want to come in and really make a difference for United. I don't think anyone, you know, would begrudge him that. And the players around him will all know him. And I think that's, you know, fine for him to come back in. I think, you know, if you look at like the likes of Adam May, who played in the last game, and players like that, we're going to need to rotate a bit. It's a busy time of year. As I said before on previous pods, we've been quite fortunate with the lack of distance we've needed to travel, really, compared to other Decembers and Christmas periods. But yeah, I think it'll be good to have Digby back and bring a bit of physicality, break up the game a bit, and yeah, regardless of how Harris sets up further up the field, I think Digby can come in and do a job.
How do you see the game panning out on Friday, Swindle, and what do you think the final score will be?
I think it's a tough one. You know, I'm really not a fan of Steve Evans, and I'm probably not alone when I say that. But yeah, Stevenage have had a cracking season. They don't concede that many goals either. So yeah, I sadly fancy Stevenage. Cambridge, you know, do tend to go to Stevenage and give them a game. I think it'll probably be 3-1 Stevenage, to be honest. And that's no disservice to Neil Harris or the players, really. But I think, you know, this is a tough place to go at a tough time in the season after a tiring year, apart from anything else. And some of those players will be really struggling, especially with the injuries around them. So, yeah, sadly, I think it might be a step too far. But hopefully we can kind of correct that looking further down the line and into 2024.
I'm not sure if we'll even get the one. I'm being pretty pessimistic about this one. How about yourself, Matt? How do you see the final score looking on Friday?
I think going to win 2-1. I do. I genuinely do. I just think if we play like we did against Oxford, we will be in a much stronger position. And honestly, I mean, you said there we would do well against most other teams like around us in League One. Over the way we played in the second half, the first half. But I genuinely think you'd be beating almost any team in the Championship if you played like that consistently. And I just think they're going to have a bit of a sort of siege mentality go into the game. I think we've got to go for it. And I just have a belief that when you approach football too much by the textbook, which maybe previous managers have, then... sometimes you just forget the sort of simple essence of the game is just to get the ball forward really quickly and get the ball into the box really early and just create chances. And that's exactly what we did. And if we keep doing that, there's absolutely no reason genuinely why we can't actually beat anyone in this division at home or away. So they've got to go there and believe that for sure. And if you go there and believe that, then there's no reason why we can't go and win the game. That's enthusiastic.
There he is. There's enthusiasm.
There he is. Christ.
Wow.
The Christmas cheer.
So we've just beaten Stevenage. Then next up, New Year's Day, Monday the 1st, Leyton Orient, the M11 derby at home. James Brophy is definitely bagging in this game. But let's find out what Steve from the Orient Outlook reckons the game will go like. Right then, Hughes fans, it's time to preview the M11 derby. And helping me do that, it's a Leyton Orient fan. It's Steve from the Orient Outlook podcast. Hi, Steve. Thanks for joining us, mate.
Pleasure to be back on your wonderful podcast.
You must be feeling good about speaking to us, because when we spoke last time, the start of the season, I can't remember the start of your season that well, but you hadn't started brilliantly. And I think you played all right the game before you played us. And then we rock up to Brisbane Road and you lot were terrific on the day. Absolutely played us off the park, got it wide, knocked it around really lovely. So yeah, you must be excited to be playing Cambridge again, given that it was such an easy 3 points last time.
Well, I remember the start of the season well. Our first four games were against all the teams who you'd expect to be around the top. And they are actually, to be fair, apart from Wickham. And I remember looking at the fixture list going, Cambridge United is the first one that stands out as a winnable game. Mm-hmm. And when you came to us, you were top, if I remember rightly. And there's all this talk about it being a really tough game. And like you said, on the day, we were fantastic. It was quite a comfortable 2-0, if I remember rightly. And we played really well. We didn't never let you kind of have a sniff in the game. It was a complete performance by us. And then from that point in the season, that seemed to kind of spark our good spell, where we looked really sharp and we went on a good run after that. So yeah, always look forward to playing Cambridge United. Cambridge is always a big game for the Orient. Like you said, M11 derby, although not, I guess, classic rivals, a bit of rivalry there. We seem to have lost like the Brightons and the Brentfords and the Fulhams in the last 15, 20 years, and up and pop like the Cambridges and kind of, I guess, the teams are a bit more far out and seem to be kind of we follow or you follow and we join you 2 seasons later.
Yeah.
The EFL trajectory. So yeah, always enjoy playing Cambridge. We love the Abbey Grounds. It's always a good ground to go to. It's quite a tight, old-fashioned away end. There's always a clamber for tickets. We'll sell it out and we'll be loud and proud and be looking forward to it after Boxing Day's win against Charlton.
Well, I was going to say you've lost some of the other sort of London games in recent years, but you've got Charlton back. Well, I don't know if you ever had Charlton before, but yeah, that was your last game out. Away trip to the Valley, very notable win there. Nice 1-0 win. What was the story of the game?
Well, it was a home win, so we had them in the first game of the season and only marginally lost 1-0 away to them. But again, Charlton, big team for us, big Boxing Day fixture, and again, probably the story of Orient's season, one without being spectacular. Quite a well-drilled team. Richie knows what he likes. He likes the team hard to beat, pack the midfield out, pass it around. If you can't go forward, just go sideways or back and keep possession. And it was quite a routine win, actually. It's been a weird last few games for Orient. We were winless in 8 and the pressure was really on. You could kind of feel that we were struggling a bit with confidence and questions were starting to be asked about Richie for the first time in his reign, which is almost 2 years now. We went to Cheltenham Town, who, as you probably know, bottom of the league, but ever improving. And the form table suggested they might beat us. Mm-hmm. We were very lucky to get a result there. We beat them 2-1, basically thanks to 2 last-minute own goals, give or take, or massive deflections. That kind of got the crowd well up. And then we travelled to Bolton last Saturday, which you might have seen or might not have. We were 3-0 down within 9 minutes away to Bolton, which is the worst defensive display since EFL records began, in terms of a single match. And then from the 9th minute, we pretty much outplayed Bolton, which seemed to spark the confidence back. We ended up losing that 3-2. And then we took that into yesterday. So I guess in terms of the longevity of it, we've only won 2 of our last 11, but we won 2 of the last 3. And yesterday's win felt like a big, big win, like Charlton, for us, a big, big game, probably the biggest London team in the division. And confidence is high. This player's got a rousing reception at the end. And there's players who have been on the outskirts of the team who have found their way back in, like Omar Beckles, who was our captain last season. Richie's taken him out. He struggled at the beginning of the season, but he's come back in the last 5 or 6 games. Looked really strong. It's kind of given that the unit defensively kind of a bit more confidence, a bit more urgency, a bit more experience in there. And he popped up in the area yesterday to score a goal. So yeah, I think we're feeling confident as Orient fans. It's been a difficult season in terms of injuries as well, because we've never been able to play our strongest 11 due to injuries. And we signed Dan Adjei from Crewe in the summer, and he was getting rave reviews. We saw him in League 2 last season. probably the best standalone player in that division last season. He scored 16 goals, I believe, about 10 assists, and he got injured in pre-season. And he's slowly been making his way back up. He's been starting the odd game here and there, coming on as a sub. And he came on yesterday and really changed the dynamic of the team.
He got the assist, right? Just looking at,
and he played a lovely ball into Beckles. That's kind of what we've been missing. We had that with Jordan Graham, who we got from Birmingham in the summer. He's out for the season. He got injured badly away to Burton Albion in the end of October. And we've really struggled in that period since him coming out to Adji coming back in. But the will seems to be coming on a little bit. I mean, it's difficult, right? As an Orient fan, you go, right, we're 13th in the league, which isn't bad for a newly promoted team. Mm-hmm. But all Orient fans are looking at Stevenage and going, well, Stevenage is 6th on a lower budget. I think everyone's comparing their club to Stevenage at the moment. It's a bit of a weird time. Northampton fans are doing the same as well after yesterday's defeat to Stevenage. So I guess as a standalone, you go 13th, we're doing well. We've got a great manager, a great board, a fairly big squad who are young as well and learning all the time, which Richie keeps saying. But then when you look up the table, you look at teams like Stevenage and you go, actually, should we be where they are? Probably. But yeah, good win against Charlton. Confident going into the next two. So Wickham away, Cambridge at home. You go, if you win those two, you kind of pull away from that mid-table positions and start getting yourself a bit more up the table. And I'm sure you're thinking the same, looking at Stevenage and your next two games. So big opportunity for the next two games for Orient.
We're looking at Stevenage as the next game and dreading it. Horrible place to go. hate playing Steve Evans teams and got an injury crisis. So that's a nailed on defeat there. So Adji, who you just mentioned there, what position does he play? Is he sort of attacking midfield?
He can play anywhere up top. So he can play left wing, right wing, and also as the nine. If you can see what Richie does, actually, we've got two number nines who have both not had the best season so far. We brought Joe Piggott in from Ipswich. Big expectation on him. Big experience. Good League One player. He's not been very good for Orient. I think 3 goals, 2 of them have been penalties. Currently on the bench. Ross Satoru, who's got 6 goals, but should have had 20 by now. Missed some absolute sitters. So Richie likes to kind of swap those two around as the number nine. And we have seen Adji play as the nine. So Adji can go anywhere. So I'd expect Adji to either go on the right or in the middle. We've got Theo Archibald on the left, who's played really well recently, really adjusted well to League One. He'd line up on the left. And then Adji, I imagine, might start after his cameo performance, either the Wickham game or the Cambridge game. But Adji looks dangerous. Richie's spoken about not trying to use him too much, trying to ease his way back in to the team. So I imagine he'll start one of the two upcoming games, whether that would be Wickham at home or Cambridge away, we're yet to see. But really excited about him. He seems like a player, a good replacement for Paul Smith, who we lost to QPR in the summer.
Have you tweaked your tactics since we played you last? I'm just looking at BBC Sport, so it could be that BBC Sport is wrong. It looks like you played sort of a 4-2-3-1 against Charlton. And I seem to remember, was it 4-3-3 when we played you earlier? Is that just misreporting, or is it a bit of a sort of a mix between the two?
Depends what kind of how Orient are setting up. 4-3-3 going forward, it can turn into a 4-2-3-1 or 4-5-1 defensively when you're defending. Recently, he was playing a 5 at the back. He seems to have moved away from that for the time being and gone back to the 4 where Beckles has come back into the team. I'd expect us to go 4-2-3-1 lineup. He likes one man up front, but what I guess one of Rich's things for me is sometimes he overthinks tactically. And he's been found out in the first 10 minutes of some games. So like Bolton away, completely set up wrong with the lineup and the tactics. And by the time he's adjusted it, you're already a goal down or two down. So he can overthink tactics. I think he isn't sure yet what his best midfield lineup is. We've got so many midfielders in terms of Pratt, Lee, Almazouni, Galbraith, Sanders, Moncur, and he only likes to play 3 of them. So he's got at least 5 to choose from. So he's still really tinkering. And I think he's not really figured out where Adji fits in best yet. He came on and played on the right yesterday. He'd done really well. So I'd expect a 4-2-3-1, but he likes to tinker during games. So he may well set up as a 4-2-3-1. And you might find within the first 15, he's changed that to a 4-3-3 or a 4-5-1, depending on how the game's going. So he likes to muddle around. And to be fair, a lot of the time, we're guessing as well when we see the lineups, thinking, right, is this player going to go right back? Is he going to go as a number four? So yeah, he likes to keep his opposition manager guessing as well. But he knows Neil Harris, right? Obviously, from League Two last season.
Yeah.
Him a couple of times. And actually, Gillingham beat us at their place quite convincingly in a really strange game. So Yeah, I think he'll like to try and out-tactic Mr. Harris.
Did he normally mix his tactics up for away games? Because I'm sort of just looking at the last six, the last six form table for away games, and you're sat in seventh there with two wins, three draws, and only one defeat. So that's pretty decent on the road. Is he sort of set up differently away from home, or is he sort of kind of much the same as if it was a home game?
Normally it's the same, but our kind of, I guess, our style is more suited to an away team where you can kind of sit back, mop up possession, and again, once you've got possession, you don't necessarily have to go forward with it. You just pass it around and wait for the little gaps. We've got a very patient team, not so direct. And like I said, Theo Archibald away to Bolton seemed to have a field down the left. He got an assist for Shaq Ford on the right, and then he got his own goal as well, which was a blinding goal to be fair to him. So I think sometimes our style of play suits being away where we can hit teams. We do have pace and we can run at teams. Well, obviously the home team is expected to come at us, give us more pressure. That's kind of plays into Richard's game plan a little bit as well. So I think with the plays we've got, being the away team suits us. Like you said, seventh in the away form table. Our win at home yesterday was our first home win since mid-October. So we've struggled more at home than what we have done away. We like playing away. And I think that could play into Richard's hands on New Year's Day.
So if you were working for Neil Harris on the scouting team, how do you reckon Cambridge could win on New Year's Day? What do you reckon might be a weakness to sort of target?
Set pieces all day long. I'd be saying, get that ball by the corner flag, try and win as many corners as you can, try and get as many long throw-ins as you can into that box, because we have struggled at set pieces and in crosses into the box. So if I was Neil Harris, I'd be going, right, try and batter their box with high balls and see if you can win your battles in there, because if you do, you're more than likely to get at least a chance.
Excellent. Sounds like a pretty game of football in store for New Year's Day. Thankfully, I'm of an age where New Year's Eve isn't going to be a big night, so it's not going to be a real sort of test to be there hungover and everything. What's your prediction for how New Year's Day is going to pan out? How do you see the game playing out, and ultimately what the score prediction is?
I reckon that we're looking probably at a 1-1. I think
Nice, yeah.
we might take the lead and lose it around the 70th, 75th minute, and it maybe might come under the cosh as the game goes on. But I think this has probably got a score draw written all over it. I don't think we'll keep a clean sheet away to Cambridge, but I think we'll score at the same time, given
Excellent.
current form. So probably 1-1.
Any idea who you reckon's going to score? Terrible question, ain't it?
Do you know what? Omar Beccles seems to be in a bit of a goal-scoring vein of form at the moment. He likes to come forward. Yesterday, he wasn't even from a set piece. He was just in the box as a centre-back. I'll go for Beccles to score a cheeky header and put us in the lead.
Terrific. I looked into this before the call, Steve. Boxing Day 1997 is the last time the M11 Derby fell around this kind of festive period. It was Cambridge win by 1-0. I couldn't find the scorer, but we had such a good team in 97, 98. It might be someone like Butler or Benjamin, something like that. So, yeah, looking forward to having Orient back over this festive period. Thanks for your time, mate, and all the best for the rest of the season.
Yeah, likewise. Love Cambridge as a club. Wish you all the best for the season. Hope to see you in League One. I hope we're doing the same next year in League One against you.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Steve. And yeah, he's feeling confident, reckons that Orient can get themselves a point. Matt, the reverse fixture of this one earlier in the season was pretty upsetting, wasn't it? And I nearly made a point about when we're talking about the Stevenage game, about how we seem to not always deliver when we've got a busy away end. Was that Orient game the worst one you've seen this season, or would you save that for Cheltenham maybe? Seems like a good topic, at
It's
the end of the
good test for my enthusiasm, my newfound
year.
enthusiasm. Orient was pretty bad, right? Again, I just think we, as a fan base over the years, have built a bit of a mystique about Orient away, and it being one that you're generally pretty up for. And also, Orient away on an August bank holiday is just like a nice prospect. So I don't know if it was actually our worst performance, but it was probably our most, like, as a fan, disappointing thing to witness, because we simply didn't get out the starting blocks that day at all. It can't be as bad as that again, frankly. And as you mentioned just then, obviously we'll have just beaten Stevenage away, so we will be flying for this one. I think, being serious, everything we said about Oxford is true. Like, we played really well. We turned out with a really threadbare squad and put in a good performance. We just ran out of gas and they tipped us over at the end. Orient at home, these are the games we need to be winning, right? These are the kind of games against other teams that are in or around us on the same form as us last five games, 7 points for both of us. Home advantage. I'm interested in transfer window. How early have we ever signed someone? Like, will we have a striker, do we think, available? Or are we going to go into that one in the same situation? We'll be interested to see.
It's been a long time. I think Sean Derry did this quite a bit, or Richard Money did it quite a bit. I can't remember now.
Money did it loads.
It's been a long time since, like, you announce a signing on the day of the game and, you know, Jono and Doug are scrambling in the commentary box there trying to put some sort of information together about this new person that's rocked up. So I'm all for it. It's been a while.
I had this at that Orient away a few years ago when Williams has scored, and then I hadn't even seen any of the news at all that day. And we subbed on a bloke, as far as I was concerned. It's like Jimmy Spencer. I was like, who?
A trialist. Who's this guy?
Yeah. I was like, literally, who is this? Like, this has never happened to me ever. We've just brought someone on, and I'm like, not a clue who you are in a league game. And that worked out pretty well. So let's do that again.
Swindle, Matt mentioned sort of Orient being pretty similar to us in the form table. Their away form is pretty decent over the last six. 2 wins, 3 draws, just the 1 defeat. That defeat was up at Bolton, where they came back from being 3-0 down to lose 3-2. So nearly turned it around. When I was speaking to Steve, he mentioned that the way Orient sort of set up and the way they play is that they quite suit being the away team and sort of playing out of possession and then sort of hitting people on the counter and things like that. So does that sort of worry you going into New Year's Day?
No, really. New Year's Day games are always slightly weird anyway, and like this time of year. So I'm not really too bothered. And like this Neil Harris style of football, I'm quite happy with going into a game against a team who are in the similar position to us. I think they'll be worried about coming to the Abbey, having seen us in the past few games. And they'll be worried about Neil Harris, I think. So, yeah, I think regardless really of what happens against Stevenage, although if Caspel's anything to go on, they'll be definitely worried. So, yeah, I think they'll be worried about coming to us. And, you know, if they start on the back foot and we start as well as we did against Oxford, then, yeah, it could be a really positive game for us. And a statement of intent in 2024, you start the new year well, get a string of results together, and you start looking forward to not back.
Well, Steve also mentioned that Orient's weakness is set pieces. And I've got a feeling 1st of January 2024, this is where my prediction for the season starts proper. I reckon Michael Morrison's going to score a headed goal from a corner. I don't know if that will be a winner or that would just be one goal in a 1-1 draw, but that's my prediction for how the game's going to pan out. Swindle, what about yourself?
I think it will be tight, but I think Cambridge United will start with a win. I'll say 2-1 to United.
Enthusiastic Matt.
10-0. No, not that enthusiastic. I think we'll win the game. Why not? 2-0.
You've gone
for rocking and rolling.
You've gone for double fist pump action over this New Year period.
Well, yeah, it's because I was let down at Oxford, because I like many people, I just dared to dream at half time as well. Whilst with a strong sense of foreboding, I just thought, imagine if, like, he'd start fist pumping from the other side of the pitch and just fist pump his all the way over the pitch to the away end, like double digits, I reckon.
So what's that? Eight fist pumps in 4 days. That's a lot. That's a lot, Matt. I don't think you're going to get it.
But it's the time. It's the time of year for, you know, excess. So why not?
Excellent. We'll wrap up in just a second. But before we do, we've had a ton of questions come in on this topic. Like Swindle said earlier in the pod, thank you, as always, for everyone that's reached out and sent questions. But this topic was pretty rife in our mentions after the Oxford results. And it seems good to end the pod by returning to that striker topic that we've mentioned a few times. Look, it's obvious we're going to try and sign a striker in January, maybe a few. But we've had questions from both Joe and Paul asking if the recruitment structure itself at the club needs looking at or changing, given us, you know, given the position that we find ourselves in. There has been some sort of debate about this, and there's been a few counterpoints, like one from Matt, who said, you know, considering Bonner only played one up top, why are we now mad at him and Strang for not getting a fourth or fifth striker? Lads, get your thoughts on this hot topic as we go into January. Do you have any concerns with how the sort of the recruitment structure set up, or are you quite content with how we are organized and feel confident that the recruitment team will get bodies over the line and with us in January?
I think I'm never that confident, and that's no disrespect to any one individual, but we always seem to be light, you know, on the ground as far as personnel is concerned. I think we've suddenly done quite well as far as kind of midfield and a bit further forward doing. But yeah, as out and out attackers, we always seem to be light. I think strikers and out attackers now are less of a thing. I think teams play with wide players and, you know, versatile players so much, you know, finding an out and out striker is quite hard. But yeah, I think it would be good to get someone in, and someone in who is identified as a kind of, you know, an attacker or a striker. I've always got my finger on the pulse, you know, so I've just seen that Spurs have recalled Dane Scarlett from Ipswich. And apparently, you know, he could be moving to a League One side. So I don't know, that could be someone to look out for. You know?
That is shameful.
A surname like that is going to be full of puns from you, surely, Swindle, right? Yeah. Scarlet Fever and
all sorts, yeah,
jokes
yeah.
Like that. What about you, Matt? Any concerns about the way the recruitment structure is at the club?
Well, seeing as I'm not just reading aloud Tom Walker's text for my tips as the strikers we should sign, I did the very natural thing that, like, anyone who, you know, is on their way to getting their badges and has spent a lot of time playing Football Manager would do, which is, you know, go a few leagues below and then look at the top scorers and then just scan down the targets and then, oh, there's Laurent Tolage. So get him in. Why not?
I think when a player like that scores as many goals at that level, you always have to look at them. I think in all seriousness, just to, you know, show that I do a little bit of prep for the show. I went for two free agents. Guion Edwards is a free agent and hasn't had a team since Ross County this year, but was at Wigan Athletic and Ipswich before that. His career seems to be on the downward, and there's rumours about him being around. And also there's a player who some people will have heard of, Joe Dodu, who was at Doncaster and at Burton, who's also a free agent. And I reckon he's got Cambridge United written all over him.
How have you done this? It's like, remember that text service, George? This is a show my age, like AQA.
Yeah.
You text, like, did you text AQA and say, like, who should Cambridge sign in the January transfer window? And that's what's come back.
Not far off.
Swindle, you've been hanging out with Gab Sutton too much, mate. That's where you're sort of getting all this knowledge of obscure players. You're going to start listing off some youth players from, like, a championship club next. So we'll pause there. We'll stop there. Thank you, everyone, for sticking with us and listening through. It's been a bumper pod with two games to review and two games to preview. If for some reason you're crazy enough to want some more UTAS content, then we have our end of year Christmas quiz available on all pod outlets. I don't want to give too much away, but the two on the panel today have done better in this pod than that one. And just a reminder that we will be back reviewing the wins against Stevenage and Orient, according to Matt Caspel, later in the, well, in the new year, Thursday. It's a weird time. Thursday is obviously not this week, it's next week. So yeah.
What day is it today?
Where are we? The 4th of January, I've got scribbled down here, is when Matt, you and Julian are doing the next pod. So we'll review those two games and then look forward to the Blackburn away game. But we've done it. We've made it through. Thank you everyone for listening. Matt, thank you very much, mate.
Oh, you're more than welcome. Enthusiastic, Matt.
Get back to hosting now, right?
Oh, apparently so.
Swindle, always a pleasure.
Happy New Year, everyone.